Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and we are so thankful, is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, my favorite politician. Welcome back, Tom.
Oh, Alan, it's great to be back with you. And let me first say happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and your listeners.
I hope you don't think I'm a turkey.
No, never,
no.
never.
No.
Maybe a pheasant now and then, but never a turkey. never.
Okay, first of all, I do want to wish you a sincere congratulations on your reelection as comptroller. You certainly deserve it. You know, I have written and said that you are the best politician in New York, and I certainly believe that.
Well, I'm always humbled when you say that, because I know you are a very astute critic and observer of New York politics. And this was a tougher year for any Democrat. So
sure.
To win and to have the strong vote that we had made me feel very good. So I think some folks have read your columns and heard your commentary, and I'm sure that helped my cause. So thank you for that, Alan.
Well, I'm not exactly an electioneerer, but I do really appreciate your very hard work. And so what about those midterms? New York Democrats lost 5 congressional seats to Republicans, and now the House is in Republican hands. There are even calls for the head of the state party, Jay Jacobs, to resign. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Well, look, given how blue New York traditionally has been, it is concerning that the red wave that many predicted was going to happen nationally really didn't happen, but it did happen in certain parts of New York. And look, it's a combination of factors. The reapportionment process obviously became a fiasco from a Democratic perspective. And I don't think anybody anticipated the Republicans would have, certainly on the Democratic side, the inroads that they did achieve for Congress, particularly from my home base, Alan, of Long Island.
Mm.
You know, every congressional seat is now held by a Republican. And I don't remember the last time Long Island didn't have at least one member of Congress from the Democratic Party. So as you point out, when you consider the apparent very slim margin of control that the Republicans have of the House, the notion that the losses in New York were responsible for that, I mean, that's disconcerting from a Democratic perspective. But lessons learned. We need to do a better job of engaging at a grassroots level. I think that's been a big issue for our party for a long time. You got to give credit to the Working Families Party that in the last couple of weeks really focused on the ground game in a very effective way. They got a very strong vote on their line, which I think says a lot for the engagement that WFP puts into the political process. And as far as the Democratic Party, I mean, I don't think it's as simple as saying, you know, it's Jay Jacobs' fault. I could tell you from my experience, Jay tried very hard to keep focus on a coordinated campaign and a coordinated effort. I think, you know, the issue probably goes more deeply in terms of how we have to really re-examine how we engage our voters and how we do outreach to independent voters, people who aren't affiliated with a party. I think some of that effort fell short this year, and I think we all bear some responsibility for that. I don't think any one person bears responsibility.
So just think about it. There were an awful lot of Democrats who were in Queens. Many of them moved to Long Island, and now you see sort of this Long Island resurgence of the Republicans. What's that about?
It's very hard to explain, because when you look at the enrollment patterns, particularly in Nassau County, to a lesser extent in Suffolk, but certainly Nassau, you've seen a huge increase in the number of enrolled Democrats. A combination of people moving in and just, you know, just changing demographics, even for folks who've grown up there. So to really have, in the case of Nassau, so many more Democrats than Republicans, and yet to see the Republicans do so well. Last year also, you remember Laura Kern's defeat as county exec came as a big surprise to people. That should have been a more clear wake-up call. There was an analysis done by Newsday the other day, which I think made a lot of sense to me. What it really showed, Alan, is that the Democratic turnout was down compared to the last gubernatorial cycle, whereas the Republican turnout was significantly higher based, you know, compared to past trends. That's what we saw last year in the off-year elections in Nassau County as well. So you've got an energized Republican base. And I have to give credit to the Republican leader in Nassau County, Joe Cairo. He is a very effective political leader. He's a great tactician. He really marshaled his forces, and that didn't happen on the Democratic side. So supercharged Republican turnout, Democratic turnout down, and Suffolk County similar. Of course, Suffolk County, a part of it very clearly is Lee Zeldin was a hometown favorite, so he turned out a big vote. And I think, Alan, this year you saw many people started out on the Republican line that normally would not have, and they stayed on the line. Mm. So you look at the margin of victory that I had, Chuck Schumer had, for example, less, you know, we still did very well. Don't get me wrong, I'll take 57% anytime, but it was down from 4 years ago. And I think that's because you saw a bigger Republican vote on Long Island, in southern Brooklyn, southern Queens as well. In certain communities in New York City, there's been a lot of analysis about the Asian American vote going more Republican than usual, some inroads with the Hispanic vote. So these should be wake-up calls for the Democratic Party not to take any community for granted.
So should the head of the state Democratic Party, Jay Jacobs, resign?
Well, look, traditionally, the model for how our party has functioned is that the governor, the state chair serves at the pleasure of the governor. So, you know, that really is going to be Governor Hochul's call. Thus far, as I understand it, she's expressed confidence in Jay. But I do think, you know, based on some of what, you know, the day after analysis, it's very clear that our party needs to look inward. And if Jay is going to continue, there has to be outreach to those segments within the party that feel that the party needs different leadership and different direction. So it's going to be the governor's call as to who the chair is going to be. But if Jay is going to continue, he really has to reach out, particularly to the progressive wing of the party that has had, you know, some concerns going back before this election result. But I think, you know, generally there needs to be an examination of how we be more effective in reaching out to communities all across the state. The rural Democrats, I think, have felt they needed more support that they didn't get. Some of the ethnic communities, you know, we saw a loss of votes in, as I said, Asian, Hispanic, some of the Jewish community. We saw some changes there that don't bode well if those patterns continue. So we have to do a lot of internal examination. Let's hope it's not a circular firing squad, which Democrats always do very well. Let's not go after each other. Let's instead say, what do we need to do to build on what is clearly a very strong Democratic base? We want to be sure that in the next go-around, we win back some of these House seats that we had lost. We want to win back some of the state Senate seats that were lost. We want to not see a continued erosion. And look, before you know it, we'll be talking about the next presidential cycle, and we want to be sure New York is going to be a strong blue state for our Democratic candidate for president.
Joining us this week is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Tom, I got lots more questions for you. New York's labor force decreased sharply during the pandemic and remains below pre-pandemic peak. North Country and Southern Tier experienced double-digit declines over the last decade. So can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're always doing reports on trends with regard to the economy, including on labor force. And what's significant about that decrease that you mentioned, Alan, over the past decade is that it is opposite of the national trend. The national trend showed an increase in the workforce of over 5%. So, I mean, this is a concern as we want to see continued recovery. We want to make sure that the labor force is there to fill the jobs. You know, we hear of so many cases where employers can't find employees. Well, part of it is our labor force has been shrinking, and that absolutely is a concern. It is not every market. In fact, three of the regional markets and some of the significant ones, Long Island, New York City, Hudson Valley, actually increased and are larger than they were over the past decade. But as you point out, there are other regions, and particularly you mentioned Southern Tier and North Country, significant decrease. So, you know, part of it is the pandemic. Part of it is demographic changes. We also see in New York our labor force more typically is at a higher education level than the national figures. We have more women in the workforce than national numbers. But it is concerning as we try to promote recovery when we see that the growth of the labor force just isn't there.
We're talking to my friend, New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Tom, tell us about your latest audit, the State Department of Labor failure to replace its longtime troubled unemployment insurance system ultimately contributed to an estimated billions of dollars in improper payments during the COVID-19 pandemic, according to one of your audits.
Yeah, well, this was a pretty big audit. You know, you started at the main point of the audit, and I'm glad you flagged it. We had warned in prior audits that the system that State Department of Labor was using to process unemployment insurance claims was outdated and not up to the task. As recently as 2015 had flagged this as an issue. And frankly, the department has been very slow to update that system. So fast forward to the pandemic hitting and the close down of the economy, people losing their jobs, tremendous need for people to get unemployment benefits so they could pay their bills, put food on the table. And the system was overwhelmed. And really, the system broke down. So what you had were a real difficulty in tracking the payments. There was an effort to get as much money out the door as quickly as possible, again, because people were hurting. But because the system couldn't handle it, they did certain workarounds. What did it result in? It resulted in a series of improper payments, in some cases people being paid more than they were entitled to. In some cases, the federal money, the new temporary federal unemployment program meant to help states deal with this issue, instead of accessing that money, money was charged to the traditional state program, so we spent money that should have been charged to the federal. And I think the biggest concern, Alan, that we found in our audit was the high level of fraud. Those that, particularly using identity theft, ripped off the system. We estimated that that cost us at least $11 billion in fraud payments, probably more than that. What we really found on top of all of this was a Labor Department that was very resistant to our auditors coming in and asking these questions to try to figure out what happened. Stonewalling, not giving timely response, giving incomplete responses. You know, many of our friends in the media kept asking, we know this audit's going on. We want to know what's happening. Well, it took until, you know, like the third week of October for us to get the final response from the department. So, and it was inadequate. So we can't give you a precise number on the loss because we couldn't get all the information from the department. So,
Tom, is this criminal?
Look, it's outrageous. I don't know that it's criminal. We didn't find any criminal referral. In terms of the fraud, yes, no doubt there was criminality there. But the problem now is we have to work to try to identify those who perpetrated that fraud. So, you know, the good news, I guess, that comes out of the audit, unlike some other agencies, Department of Labor accepted all of our recommendations. Mm-hmm. And so they are working to upgrade the system. It's probably not going to happen until 2023. They are going to work with the federal officials to try to recoup some of the ill-gotten gains, particularly with regard to the fraud. How much of that they're going to be able to recover, whether or not you're going to be able to hold people accountable criminally for that ripoff, it's very hard to say. Very hard to say how much of that will be recovered. But you're really talking about a system that was warned about its insufficiency, wasn't prepared for what happened with the COVID closed down. Not that any of us could have been prepared for that, but it really resulted in the waste of billions of dollars. Now, one of the issues here, Alan, which we've pointed out in previous reports, is that New York owes the federal government now about $8 billion in unemployment, the loan that we had to take out to cover these costs. Some other states used a portion of the federal relief money to pay some of that outstanding balance down, because what happens is the way that the feds recoup that money is that they increase the charge to our businesses as part of their unemployment insurance payments. This is the worst time, particularly for our small businesses, to incur that additional cost. So there are a lot of issues swirling around this whole program that need to be addressed.
We're talking to Tom DiNapoli, my friend Tom DiNapoli, I should say, the comptroller of the state of New York. So what about the pension fund? I hear the numbers are down. That's where much of the New York money is, isn't it?
Well, it's been a rough time in the markets. As you know, we were very pleased when you and I talked earlier in the year that we finished our fiscal year on March 31st with over a 9.5% return, well above our 5.9 annual long-term goal. And then, of course, the markets went into a tailspin. So the first quarter returns at the end of June 30th, we were down about 8%. We just put out this week our returns for the second quarter of our fiscal year, which is September 30th, and we had a decrease of about 3.8%. So it's less of a decrease than we had with the first quarter, so there has been some improvement in the markets. And we know since September 30th, again, the markets have been a little better. But the unease in the markets, the impact of inflation, high interest rates, you know, so far now, halfway through our fiscal year, you know, it's a down number. So first of all, for your listeners who are our public retirees, not to worry. We have plenty of money. We're a well-funded plan. We were over 100% funded at the end of the last fiscal year. So there's no jeopardy for their benefits. And for the current workers, we're fine and we're flush. And because we're well-funded, we'll get through this tough time. We have till next March 31st to get the final number. So while these numbers mean something, they're estimated numbers, the number that's going to matter the most is how we end on March 31st. So hopefully the markets will continue to recover. But look, hey, it's a time of great uncertainty. Mm. That's reflected in these returns. But bottom line is, you know, not to worry. We still have plenty of money for the pensions, and I still have confidence. We have a very diversified portfolio. We've gone through tough times before. This is not as severe a downturn as we saw when the Great Recession hit. Remember that year we lost 26% value in 1 year. I don't think we're headed to that by any means. But hey, it's a very problematic time with the U.S. economy, with the global economy, the impact of the war in the Ukraine. You go down the long list of what's unsettling the markets. It's a more challenging time right now. It just is.
So, Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, do the majority of New Yorkers pay their taxes?
Oh, sure. Yes, they do. Not always happily so, right? Nobody always, like, you know, grumbles around April 15th, but they do. But, you know, we're one of the issues that we look at carefully now is taxpayer migration. There's no doubt that we have lost some of our taxpayers, particularly at the higher end of the scale. It's important to point out that the top 1% of taxpayers carry about 40% of the personal income tax revenue that the state receives. So we do have to be mindful of tax burden and what that impact is. You know, contrary to what some people say anecdotally, all of the wealthier folks are not leaving New York State. Have some, yes, absolutely. Do we need to continue to look carefully at those patterns before we consider changes on the revenue side? Yeah, we do. But yeah, New Yorkers are law-abiding by and large, and they do pay their taxes on time. And we're still seeing, Alan, the tax revenue coming in, particularly personal income tax, coming in higher than projections. So, you know, whether it's sales tax revenue, personal income tax revenue, yeah, the economy is a little more troubled right now, but we're still in good shape. Where we're headed next year, I think there is some concern that the out-year budget gap that had been initially projected, about $310 billion, probably is going to be a bit higher. You know, we're looking at the numbers carefully now because before you know it, the governor will present the executive budget. The legislature will work on that. There's a lot of uncertainty with where the economy's headed. So, as we always say in the controller's office, caution is appropriate. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves because I think it is going to be a tougher budget climate next year than it was certainly the past couple of years.
Well, so, Tom DiNapoli, tell me about online gambling revenue. What are the numbers? Is New York winning?
New York is doing pretty well compared to other states. We're doing much better with the mobile sports betting, particularly. Our numbers have been really strong. But, you know, as I've always said, you know, whether it's casinos or mobile betting, or now that cannabis is becoming legal, let's not, or the state lottery, let's not plan on funding our government services by gaming and gambling. So whatever money that's coming in is a plus. You know, there's a downside to this. And the downside, as we pointed out in our audits, is that New York hasn't done as good a job. It's getting better, by the way, but hasn't done a good a job of taking some of those earnings and some of that revenue and putting it towards dealing with those that have the problem of compulsive gambling addiction. It ruins families. We need to provide the kind of services and counseling to help those get out of that. So that's still, I think, a big issue that we need to look at.
We're talking to Tom DiNapoli, our controller, my friend, I may say. Hey, Tom, I wanted to ask you about something called cryptocurrency. I don't think a lot of people understand exactly what it is. So part one of your Blue Book question is, tell us what it is.
Well, that's a lot right there. Well, let me say, first of all, our pension fund is not invested in any of the cryptocurrencies. And Alan, far be it from me to be the one to explain how it all works, because I don't fully understand it myself. But you could be sure that if we don't understand it, we're not going to be investing in it. I don't know from my reading that it is, as some suggest, you know, a Ponzi scheme and the whole thing is going to blow up. But certainly when you just read the headlines, a lot of folks are not doing well right now with the whole crypto currency fad or wave or whatever it is. It does seem like something that's still going to be out there. So I do think certainly from a regulatory point of view, we should be looking at it. Probably that's more at a federal level than a state level, and figure out how we're going to manage this.
Is the governor being cooperative with you?
Governor Hochul and I have a longstanding, a great personal relationship. It goes back to prior to becoming governor, prior to becoming lieutenant governor. You know, the big concern for me on a professional, governmental basis is what is going to be the disposition of the bill that passed overwhelmingly in the legislature to restore our contract authority. That bill has not been acted upon yet. I actually don't think it's been sent over yet, but it will be sent over very soon. It has to be sent over by the end of the year. And certainly from my point of view, if you put a priority on transparency and accountability, which we certainly do in the controller's office, and I know the governor indicated when she became governor she was going to improve the atmosphere and the tone of state government, particularly with regard to transparency. I think the best way to make that clear is to sign that legislation. So,
has she shown any resistance? I mean,
I think it'd be fair to say there's been some concerns raised, but, you know, frankly, the election came along and everybody was working very hard, so there hasn't been much discussion going on about it, but I'm sure that will pick up again. But to me, the bill is in great shape. It could be signed as is. If there are any suggestions for modifications, if they are minor and do not undercut the main purpose of restoring our oversight that we had for 100 years that was taken away with negotiations between the previous governor and the legislature, if there are minor tweaks to it, I'm sure that's something that could be worked out with the Senate and the Assembly sponsors. But I think the bill is fine as is. I'm hoping she'll sign it. I think that would that would go a long way to sending the message about how New York State government is going to be positioned for the future.
And have you had conversation with her on this?
I've had conversations with her team about it. Absolutely. I think they know pretty clearly where I stand on it.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so you say that the state should improve financial literacy efforts, and your audit has recommended greater coordination by state agencies. New York State should improve its track record when it comes to promoting financial literacy and providing New Yorkers with access to information and tools to build their financial knowledge and skills. Are you getting pushback?
No, I mean, I think just the opposite. In fact, I had a great conversation recently with our Education Commissioner Betty Rosa, because State Ed is doing a lot in this area. But we have different agencies that have different pieces of this, Department of Financial Services, Office of the Aging, and so on. We really, just as you point out in your question, we have these different programs. We need to do a better coordination. We've had some initiatives actually through the Comptroller's Office, particularly using online tools to promote financial literacy. What this is all about, Alan, is empowering people, hopefully at every age of the life cycle, to make better financial choices when it comes to budgeting, savings, planning for retirement, and especially as we continue to go through a very challenging economy, this becomes more important than ever, and it really gives people the power to do a better job managing their own financial resources. So I think this is an area that everyone is talking about a lot more, and our audit really just suggested we've got some great efforts going on in New York. Let's just try to pull it together a little more so it's coordinated, and that way it can have greater impact.
You are my favorite New York State politician. I've said it, I've written it, and I'll say it again. We're out of time. Our guest is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Thank you so much, Tom. I always appreciate your being here with us and explaining what might otherwise be complicated things, because when you say them, we get them. And thank you so much.
Alan, thank you for always giving me a forum and an opportunity to reach out to New Yorkers, and you're just the best in my book. So happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and all your listeners.
Thanks to you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us online anytime at WAMC.org, or just schedule a podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. Thanks for listening.